Hi, I'm Siobhan Fletcher and welcome back to A Brief History of Pride. Last week we reminisced on last year's Isle of Pride event and heard a little about why you won't see one, at least on the same scale, here on the island this year. In this, the last instalment of our series, we're going to stop looking back at the past and turn our focus to the future, pondering the question, do we still need Pride? Are you in love like we were? If I were you, I'd probably keep her. Makes me want to hit her when I see her. This Becky's so hot in your vintage t-shirt. From the outside, it may seem that there's never been a better time to be part of the LGBTQ plus community. And on a surface level, you'd be forgiven for thinking that. This year's London fireworks on New Year's Eve featured an ode to Pride in London.
More than a million people take to the streets of London for London Pride, 50 years since the Gay Liberation Front organised the UK's first Pride march.
We can watch the art of drag in a primetime spot on the BBC now that RuPaul has hopped onto our TV screens on this side of the pond.
If you can't love yourself, how the hell are you gonna love somebody else?
Same-sex marriage was legalised here in the Isle of Man in 2016, and men who have sex with other men can now donate blood, an omission which was challenged at last year's Isle of Pride event by Manx actor Joe Locke. And most major cities in the UK host a Pride event year in, year out. The world is a very different place than it was 50 years ago, or 100 years ago, or even 10 years ago. But that's not to say there's equality for all, everywhere. This year alone, politicians in Uganda cheered as they passed a new bill making it illegal to identify as LGBT.
Uganda's parliament has passed a bill which would criminalise people who identify as LGBTQ, with those found guilty facing up to 10 years in prison.
Anti-drag laws are sweeping across the United States.
Several Republican-led states, including Florida, Kentucky, Idaho, North Dakota, Montana, and Oklahoma, are considering legislation that would ban drag shows in public. Tennessee became the first state to pass such a law last week, and it's raising new questions about what exactly is being made illegal and why.
In the UK, the Baroness Casey Review, which was commissioned in the wake of the murder of Sarah Everard in 2021 by serving firearms officer Wayne Cousins, found the Metropolitan Police to be institutionally racist, sexist and homophobic.
Britain's biggest police force was labelled broken and rotten to its core and has suffered a collapse in both public trust and support.
And last year's Men's World Cup in Qatar was under the spotlight, given the country's anti-gay laws.
Ever since FIFA chose Qatar back in 2010, the smallest nation to have hosted football's greatest competition has faced some big questions.
At the time of this programme, simply being gay is illegal in 67 countries around the world, almost half of which are Commonwealth jurisdictions. And it's punishable by death in 11. Given this context, throughout the series, I asked my interviewees the simple question, do we still need Pride? The resounding answer was yes.
I'm Zoe Bennett. More now than ever, I think. It's a scary time, and Pride most definitely is needed. And as I say, more now than ever. You know, so many things are happening right now to attack the LGBT community, you know, trans, queer, however you define yourself, non-binary, whatever, you know, however you define yourself, you are under attack for. And I think, you know, we're stumbling headlong into Orwellian dystopian sort of horror show. I think it's up to people to use compassion and understanding and kindness towards one another and try and understand each other more, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know I'm sure a lot of this stuff is clicks and, you know, for media, because you know, there's no such thing as as a poor media, apparently, just, you know, regardless of what you say, if it's getting you on the airwaves, if it's getting you trends on Twitter and stuff like that, you know, it's upping somebody's visibility. But if you're going to do that at the cost of potentially harming somebody else's life, then that's a pretty awful thing to do. It makes you a pretty awful person, quite frankly. Yeah, I do think Pride is incredibly important and I'd love to see more Pride events on the Isle of Man, and I would 100% be there. My partner and I were looking forward to coming this year, you know, after last year, but unfortunately that's not to be. I'd like to hope that the Mag to Gay community do sort of step up and you know, take the baton again and try and hold some events. Even if they're, you know, even if they're smaller ones and staggered across the year. But, you know, I think there needs to be something there so that people know that they're not alone, that they have got somewhere to go and they have got people they can talk to. And that there is somewhere where they can be themselves and feel safe. And I think that's important. That's important, not just, you know, not just for the Isle of Man, but globally. So, yes, Pride still very, very much needed. And I'm still very, very proud of who I am and what we achieved in the short time that we were able to have Isle of Pride.
My name is Owen Atkinson. Some people may know me as Fenella Beach. We absolutely need Pride. As long as, you know, queer people don't feel safe on the streets, as long as queer kids don't feel safe coming out to their parents, we still need Pride, you know? I am visibly queer and I get street harassment all the time in and out of drag. I think that's proof that that Pride is needed. And I, like, most of my friends will say the same. You know, it's Pride, I think, should look like, I think if we can shift the focus towards protest, towards community activism, towards, at Pride last year, they had a poetry tent in the afternoon. That was really wonderful. People sharing their stories. We're lucky to have Simon Madderall over here at that time and loads of local queer poets, which was great. I think, people making speeches, people talking about their experiences. Obviously, drag on the stage is a given. and yeah, you can have the fun and you can have the celebration. You can have the, you know, the big stage with all the artists and everything, as long as you kind of have that reminder of what it's all about. And I think that kind of grassroots organization is kind of hopefully what we're seeing for 2024, which is very exciting. And I think that Pride can, now that we've seen that it can be successful, it can be kind of reorganized and restructured and refocused. Mm-hmm. And that's really exciting.
I am singer and actress Vida LaFierce. Anyone who can't see a reason for Pride is ironically the reason for it. It's, you know, the fact that if you've never had to actually fight for equality and fight for your rights, then, you know, that is something that is really worth celebrating because there's huge progress been made, but there's still a long way to go. There are still injustices happening on our own doorstep, but further afield as well, there's so many countries in the world with anti-LGBTQ plus laws, and there's so many that are in the process of making more of them. Some countries seem to be taking backward steps, like you can see what's going on in some states in America at the moment, and that is terrifying because anyone sitting watching a situation where a country is going backwards in human rights should be terrified, because if you think it's just the gays or the trans people they're coming for, think again, because they'll be the first, but then what's to stop them coming for someone else's rights next and someone else's after that? And if you think it can't happen, you know, it can. Like, all it takes is the wrong people in power and a swish of a pen, and rights can be taken away. No rights are guaranteed forever. So even though we've won some, they're not enshrined forever. The wrong person can come across and wipe them out. And that should be terrifying to everybody. Because an attack on any group's human rights is an attack on all of our human rights. So the fact that some countries are taking backward steps should scare everybody. Because it could be you next.
You mentioned the US there. I mean, we are seeing sweeping laws against drag queens and drag artists in the US.
Whenever you see some kind of hate aimed at drag queens, when you're actually discussing with people online, that very quickly becomes something apparent when you say, like, what's your problem with drag queens? And they say, oh, well, it's adult entertainment. It's like, nope. Or it's this, or it's dangerous. Or it's like, clearly, you're confusing drag with something else. So it very quickly becomes apparent when you look at any of their arguments that they are definitely confusing drag with something else. I always make the point that drag is a form of theater. It's a performance art. And it also draws from many other performance arts. So there are no two drag queens out there who are the same. So you'll get singing queens, you'll get comedy queens, you'll get looks queens, makeup queens, so many different types. I'm a singing queen mostly, which is great because I get my foot in the door as a music act as well as a drag act. So I might be able to get in places that wouldn't normally have drag. So I feel myself very lucky there. But when people try and tar the whole art of drag, and they'll cite examples of like some drag artists in like revealing clothes, or, you know, there are some more adult appropriate performances and some queens who are just more geared towards a particular market, like a more mature market. But that kind of thing, you know, happens in any art form. There's obviously paintings with more mature content, and no one is trying to claim that just because of those examples that all painting is explicitly adult, because that would be ridiculous. And the same with TV and film and theatre. There's obviously a rating system for films, because there are more adult-orientated ones and more mature content. But no one is claiming that all TV, film, and theatre are explicitly adult entertainment just because some things are. Because again, that example would be ridiculous. And then you've got music as well. Like, you've got straight artists or straight identifying artists singing some fairly obscene stuff, like, you know, WAP and stuff like that. And like, that's totally acceptable. You've also got films with drag in, like, I was in Miss Doubtfire with Robin Williams, Victor Victoria, Tootsie, you know, classic, Some Like It Hot. You know, all these classic films that have depicted drag that everyone's fine with. But then as soon as there's a queer identity attached to it, they try and find a way to justify their hate towards it. And it's like, nah, let's not pretend this is about anything but a bit of old-fashioned discrimination. And then the other point I make is drag is like, it's basically acting. It's a character that we're playing. Because there was someone trying to dispute something with me in a disagreement online saying, oh, well, a drag artist out of drag is still a drag artist. I'm like, no, I think the word you're looking for there is person. It's like, you wouldn't book, say, Sir Patrick Stewart and claim he's a professional astronaut just because he played one on TV, or Harrison Ford and claim he's an adventuring archaeologist, because when they've taken those costumes off, they're themselves again. It's playing a character. And then, you know, I've given that example to people and they've laughed. And it's like, well, no, that's what people are doing by claiming that a drag artist out of drag is still a drag artist. It's like, no, they're a person. It's really weird. And it seems that people just really love forcing identities on people rather than just accepting people for who they are at any given moment. Drag actually has nothing to do with sex. It has nothing to do with identity. It's purely a performance art. And it may be handy for some people. I've known straight drag artists. I've known gay drag artists. I've known everyone in between. And, you know, it's about the performance art. We put a costume on and we do performances because we like to see people smile. And the way the world is, the more smiling you can get people to do, the better. It can be a dark world sometimes. So a bit of fun, a bit of entertainment. It's using our skills to make people happy. And that's the root of any performer's sort of motivation.
Jane Poole-Wilson.
And Claire Barber.
you can tell from speaking to you both just how passionate you were about Isle of Pride and about it kind of going forward. Would there be anything on the horizon in the future then?
So certainly there's been a number of conversations I've had with people who were involved with Isle of Pride and also with other people who for various reasons weren't able to be involved at that time, but you know, their circumstances now have allowed them a little bit more time. You know, and my message has just been, you know, very much as Jane said, you know, we've done two of these now, so we have got some idea of what needs to happen. You know, we're absolutely happy to share that. We're not looking to run it, you know, but equally, if someone puts an event on, I know I'd turn up and throw a yellow jacket back on and volunteer picking litter or whatever.
Litter picking. I'm telling you, she was all about litter picking.
I've got so many outfits I need to wear, so I would be there as well.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, I'm going over to the UK end of next week because through this role, I've actually been supporting a new pride that's setting up in the UK. So I'm going over to the UK for the first Bracknell Pride. And I'm volunteering at that. So, you know, whether it be picking up litter or showing people where the bathrooms are or giving people just more general advice, you know, absolutely happy to go and support because I absolutely fundamentally believe that equality and inclusion for everyone is absolutely imperative and every modern civilization should be judged on how they treat every individual, not just those people who, you know, happen to be represented in Parliament or wherever else. It's absolutely right. Everyone has an equal voice. And all the time I believe passionately about it, which I hope will be as long as I am alive and well, I will go out and fight for the causes that I believe in. So yeah, for me, Pride will always be something I'm hugely passionate about.
And I do think, as Claire said, there have been some conversations. So I think the hope is that there are people who are now looking at how they may come together and you know, start to develop out Pride. I think like all of us who've been involved, because we can see that it's got potential and the year-round work as well, I think would be huge if we could get that going. So, you know, my absolute willingness is to offer all the benefit of the experience we've had so far, because why, you know, we've learned a lot, but also actually critically, you know, if we can support in any way with developing, with doing more, then absolutely it's the right thing to do. And my goodness, you know, this island should be a wonderful place for anyone, no matter who they are, to be who they are. And I think Claire's right, you know, you've got to be able to feel safe and cared for here no matter what, and that's what counts.
Back in 2010, I spoke to human rights campaigner Peter Tatchell. He's probably most well known for his provocative acts of civil disobedience in the fight for equality all around the world. He's also now the subject of a documentary on Netflix entitled Hating Peter Tatchell. He told me a bit about the first ever Pride March organised by the GLF, which we touched on in the first episode of the series.
For us, it was an experiment, a gamble. We didn't know what to expect. We didn't know how many people would turn up, and we didn't know what the response of the police and public would be. Back in those days, most LGBT plus people were not open about their sexuality or gender identity. They were closeted. They feared rejection by their friends and family. They were worried about getting sacked from their job or evicted from rented accommodation. So when we pitched this idea of the first gay pride, it was very much a hope that there would be a reasonable number of people, maybe 500, 1,000, maybe a bit more, who would have the courage to take a public stand. We were very delighted when nearly 1,000 people turned out for the first ever Pride in Britain. That for us was a success. In terms of the idea of gay pride, we came up with that as an antidote to the idea that society would usually in those days say that we should be ashamed of being gay, that it was something disgraceful, reprehensible, immoral, even criminal. So gay pride was the antidote to gay shame. And we were very much determined to give a whole new consciousness to LGBT plus people, as well as to the wider public. So we also had a very short, simple, three-word slogan: gay is good. And like gay pride, it sought to turn on its head everything that society said about us, that we were bad, that we were mad, that we were sad. We were saying gay is good. And that slogan back then was revolutionary, because it contradicted and turned upside down the prevailing straight social consensus. Now, we were challenging the way in which society had depicted LGBT plus people, not for years or decades or centuries, but for millennia.
So what about Pride going forward then? Well, for Peter, the movement as it is today needs to radically change.
Well, I have for many years argued that every Pride organisation in Britain should twin with another Pride organisation, particularly in countries where there is intense homophobia and state repression. Mm-hmm. So it'd be great if some Pride parades could twin with Cameroon, Belarus, China, Nigeria, and so on. We really do need to make this movement a global one and to show solidarity with LGBT plus people in other countries who are struggling under conditions of great adversity, where they are risking their lives and liberty. Those people need our support. I and many other people want to see Pride events radically change. We want to see them as less commercial and corporate. We want to see them as more political and human rights oriented. We want to end the way in which you have to pay or get permission to march in Pride parades. They should be open to everyone, LGBT plus, and our straight friends and allies who support us. Pride has to change, and change has to start now.
You've been listening to the fifth and final part of a series of special programmes looking at the history of Pride, right here on Manx Radio. All five episodes of A Brief History of Pride are now available for you to listen back at manxradio.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Just a side note for you before you go. You may be aware of recent controversy on the island regarding the relationships and sexual education curriculum taught in our schools, which was paused in February due to concerns raised by parents. Stories of what happened on a drop-down day, in which guest speakers are invited to speak to pupils, reached international media, including the Daily Mail, GB News and Fox News. There is currently an ongoing investigation into what exactly happened, which will be published in due course. Now, whilst this involved the queer community here on the island, it wasn't the focus of this series, but we in the newsroom here have been keeping a close eye on proceedings and have plans to issue a new programme once the details of that investigation are released. So stay tuned to Manx Radio for that story when it breaks. For now though, thank you for tuning in over the past 5 weeks. I've been Siobhan Fletcher, and you've been listening to A Brief History of Pride. Yeah. I kiss a girl, no surprises. I really, really liked it.